This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Hey, Carm Capriato here, the Automotive Aftermarket Podcast Guy, and welcome to episode 643 with Jake Sorensen from McNeil's Auto Care in Sandy, Utah. Hey, are you having trouble finding qualified technicians? Have you ever thought about starting an apprentice program, but you just don't know where to begin? In this episode, Jake Sorensen breaks down all the classic questions and concerns that arise with apprentice programs. Look, it's time to stop complaining about a technician shortage and start becoming the solution. Are you willing to invest in your employees and your business? Well, if so, keep listening. This episode can change your trajectory for the future of your business. Hey, thanks to our sponsor, NAPA, for providing this great episode for you. Now, you know, NAPA Expo is coming July 18th through the 21st, 2022. NAPA is dedicated to putting on a safe and a valuable in-person experience, and they'll be following all appropriate protocols to ensure that all attendees enjoy their experience safely. We hope to see you in Las Vegas July 18th through the 21st, 2022. Hey, plan ahead. Hey, if you're new to the podcast, then I recommend you follow it in your podcast app and listen to the back catalog at your leisure. I'd recommend Town Hall Academy, episode 216, titled Have You Started Your Apprentice Program? Because it lends itself to my discussion here with Jake. You can't learn enough about apprentice programs. You can find the key talking points for this episode and every episode ever released on my website, remarkableresults.biz. Hey, warm welcome to my friend, Jake Sorensen. Hello, Jake.
Hey, Carm. Thanks for having me.
I'm the lucky guy. I appreciate you being on, Jake. Happens to have some really cool trophies, I think, hanging around your joint. The NAPA ASC Technician of the Year for 2019. That's cool.
Yeah, that was pretty fun.
And the 2019 Ratchet & Wrench All-Star Technician of the Year. And Jake's also an ASC Master Technician with L1, 2, 3 advanced level certifications. What do you do in your spare time?
You know, I like to do a lot of outdoors stuff. So my family and I go camping a lot. We have a boat. We go to the lake and I do a lot of hunting and things like that. Anything but work on cars.
I hear you. Shop manager, diagnostic technician at McNeil's Auto Care, Sandy, Utah. Jake's been on before in panels, but I've never done a true one-on-one with Jake because the thing I love about Jake is he actually helped develop an apprentice program that's registered with the U.S. Department of Labor, and NAPA picked it up and ran with it nationally.
Yeah, they saw what we were doing here, and first, they said, well, we're looking for something, but it's hard to scale anything that shops are running, you know, locally to a national level. And but when they came out and saw what we were doing, they said, we think we could really scale this and offer it to all of our shops and give them an opportunity to have apprentices and bring up technicians themselves. So that's what they've done.
You obviously saw a need because we say in our industry we have a tech shortage, Jake, and we don't know, is it the body or is it the quality of the person?
That's always been my kind of argument, and I guess it probably doesn't matter either way, whether we're short on technicians or we're short on quality technicians. I think every shop owner can agree that when you need a tech and you run an ad, you're either not getting applicants or you're not getting qualified applicants. Whichever one it is doesn't make a difference. You don't have the tech that you need in your shop. So we've got to look for other ways to bring technicians in, to find people that aren't in the industry right now and give them an opportunity to be that next tech that you're looking for.
I have gotten way too often up on my soapbox to talk about apprenticing. And the reason that I did is because of you guys and what I saw was working with you. Of course, there's other apprentice programs inside the industry. And maybe somebody's just going to wake up one day and say, I've got to do this on my very own. I've got to take the steps. So one of the things that I want to talk about today is a little bit of why we need to do this, how we need to do it. I want to try to answer some questions with you because I think there's people standing on the sidelines, Jake, and I think they're hesitant to make a move. Now, they could listen to all my episodes on apprenticing and still yet they've not done it. I think we know why. We are going to solve if every one of you out there that owns a shop decides to put an apprentice program together. Coaching companies have it. Suppliers have it. They're out there. They're available. The Department of Labor authorized. My friend Mike Davidson has one. If we all did this, we wouldn't have a tech shortage in 5 years.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, we've heard the criticism that, well, if you have an apprenticeship program, you're adding one technician and we need, you know, thousands throughout the country. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but we need a lot more than one. So we're essentially spitting on a fire, right? We're not making a whole lot of progress here. But as you just said, if every shop owner would get involved, would try to incorporate some kind of an apprenticeship, would try to help bring up a technician, it will help solve our problem. I'm not saying apprenticeships are the only option or the only solution we have. I mean, we still need tech schools. We still need colleges and things like that that are going to help train people and all the paths that everyone was taking beforehand. But this is another avenue. And in my opinion, the best avenue that we have. And exactly as you said, we need all shops to get on board with this. The more we have, the better we'll be at finding a solution to this problem.
Yeah, you're right. The colleges, the tech schools are very important because not everyone is going to go down this pathway. But it's almost like it's our role to consider doing this. Now, if we make a call for all 250,000+ shops that are in the U.S. to do this, and Canada, I'm not excluding you at all. And half of them, even 25% of them do. Just think of the number of grads that would be, it would come out with 4 ASEs and all that great training and all that hands-on experience to help seed not only our shops, but our industry. You know, I was talking to someone the other day that says, yeah, but I don't need anybody. And I said, okay, I'll buy that. That's a great excuse. It's probably, you know, sitting in your pocket waiting to come out to give to me. Great excuse. But what about, what's your business going to be like in 2 years? You can't tell me. You can't tell me. And even, we've heard these great stories, Jake, where people have had apprentices, they didn't have a place for them at the end of the run. And they picked up their phone, called their peer network and said, listen, I got this great young man, young woman. They've taken them on. They came back after a while, you know, to come into the shop because they had an opportunity. They'll never forget where they got that training.
No, and you think the shops around you aren't going to remember that you sent somebody to them? You know, I think one of the arguments I hear a lot of the time is, you know, what if they leave me or it doesn't work out? I don't have the position for them. I don't need them at the end. Well, you've added another tech to your local market, not just nationally, but you've put somebody in shops around you, which displaced a spot. So when you need a technician, there's now an extra body out there near you.
Yeah, I know. Absolutely true. Now, let's talk about internally. You have noticed in your shop, the level of training, it just kind of exploded, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we started the program because we had a lack of technicians. We were trying to fill that void. But what we didn't realize was a lot of the unintended consequences of having a training program in place. You know, the other technicians see these apprentices training all day long. I mean, they're taking online training, they're going to classes, they're watching training videos, they're studying for certifications, they're taking those tests, and they start to get a little nervous that the new guy is nipping on their heels and knows things they don't. You know, it's pretty fun when you see somebody new to this industry, you know, a few months in and they point out something to one of the older guys that they didn't know. And they start to realize that they've got to pick it up. And because we're offering the training and they're being exposed to it and they see the opportunities, they're more willing to take it and jump on. So when we started our apprenticeship program, our average tech here had, I think it was about 3 ASEs. And now our average technician at our shop is a master level ASE technician.
So cool. A fallout, if you will, or a fall up from your commitment to this. I remember we did a show, a podcast in Academy with one of your most recent grads. In fact, I think his name was Jason Molnar.
Yep.
Here was my big takeaway. He thanked his family for supporting him. And here's the deal. This isn't just daytime. I mean, an apprentice, no different than a normal technician, Jake, needs to invest extra time to pull this off.
Yeah, it's a real commitment on their part. You know, they're spending a lot of time in the after hours taking online training or going to classes, studying. And, you know, what we found is that most of them really understand the opportunity they're being given, and they're excited to have it, and they're willing to invest the time and effort needed. And, you know, you look at a story like Jason's, who we get a lot of different stories. It's kind of fun to see the background and how all these apprentices come into this. But somebody like Jason, he was in another career. You know, this wasn't his first career choice, and he just hated what he was doing, thought this would be more enjoyable for him, and which it has been. He absolutely loves it. And he was willing to spend all the time it needed to make this work, and it has. And so you see them thank the family because they're behind them at home and making sure that they can make this work.
He was a pharmacy technician.
Yeah, he was. He was counting pills all day and kind of fell into it right out of high school. It was one of those things that the school offered a program for you to get into a career, and sounded great. And he just did not enjoy it.
So let's talk about the training that you do. Is it daytime, nighttime for the normal group? Forget the apprentice. Let's put the apprentice on the shelf for a minute. Are you paying for? Is it daytime? Is it nighttime? Help me understand your commitment to training. And I think that connects to having a commitment to the apprentice.
We offer quite a bit of different types of training because I'm a firm believer that everyone learns differently. So we have to give a variety. You know, we're part of the NAPA Auto Care Group. So we use the auto tech training that they offer, which is in the evenings. And some technicians really like that, going to a class. Others don't enjoy being out late at night, you know. So it's kind of best of both worlds. We also offer in-house training, which I know we'll kind of talk about a little more. But those, we usually try and close the shop a little bit early. We offer food. We turn it into kind of a training event, if you will. I try and put together a quick case study every other week that I share at a weekly stand-up meeting, where we'll just kind of go over a car that was difficult or I thought might be interesting for everyone to see and learn about. And we'll talk about the path we went down, how we got to the answers we did, what we could have done better, and answer any questions that come up from that. Just talking about those things a lot of times brings up good questions. So that's during the day. As far as the evening classes go, we don't generally pay the technicians time for those, for most of them. We will occasionally, when we do kind of an event here at the shop, we'll give them some pay. But for the most part, it's kind of considered that we're offering free training to them. And most of them take that and enjoy it. None of our training is mandatory. We do have a bonus program that has some requirements of training if they want to get that. And it's never really become an issue anymore. Our technicians all want the training. They all take it. They enjoy it. So we don't really have to track or make sure that they're attending anything or require that training to get it.
Jake, what's your opinion or your feeling on daytime versus nighttime?
As far as short, quick training, I really enjoy it. I like having, you know, once a week or every other week, some sort of quick, you know, less than an hour training. You know, one thing that I'm working on right now is a lunch and learn type thing where we'll just grab some pizzas and go over some sort of training topic and keep it under an hour. I really enjoy that for me personally. I know a lot of the techs here are hyper-focused on production, and so they don't like stopping what they're doing or getting pulled away from that, and they prefer the evening time training. And so again, it's kind of a, you have to look at what all of your techs enjoy and know that not all of them like the same thing. So we try and offer the biggest variety we can so that each of them is getting something that they prefer.
If the entire industry tomorrow, Jake, went to daytime training, now I know that won't happen, but scenario, would you continue to find the time in your schedule, work around the fact that a tech wouldn't be there because they're leaving to go? Maybe it's a local that they have to travel to a place, or you send them up to the training room for an entire 4 hour, for example, an online training session. Could you survive? Would you survive? Would your people embrace it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that if you've got a technician that's willing to interrupt their workday to go learn, and obviously if it was daytime training, those things would have to be paid. And we do pay for the daytime type training that pulls away from production hours. But I think that if you find a technician that's willing to take that time away from the shop and go learn, you're going to get some of the best training that you can. The training that's being offered is going to be better because I think that you're now going to a full-time training opportunity and not necessarily an afterthought in the evenings. So I think the quality of training is better. I think the acceptance from the technicians would probably be better. I would really like to see our industry move that direction. I know that we have some things where we have training events like Vision or others that we send technicians to. And I think you'd be hard pressed to find somebody that's attended anything like that that didn't say it far exceeds any of the quick, you know, evening type trainings that they've attended before.
Hey, Carm here. And coming up, Jake gives examples of who should be leading your in-house training. Hey, it's Carm here, talking to you about what the Napa Auto Care Center program can do for your business. Now, you probably already know the Napa brand is the most recognized and trusted name in the automotive aftermarket industry. In fact, studies show that 95% of consumers recognize Napa and associate it with quality parts, service, and technical expertise. So why not complete a Pro Image upgrade and take advantage of that? Pro Image is a co-branding program for the exterior and interior of your shop. On the outside, it includes the Napa colors and distinctive Napa signage. While the public may know you as a reliable, locally owned business, a Pro Image upgrade helps set your shop apart from the competition even further. It's also a visual signal to customers and potential customers that you and Napa are partners. Most importantly, Pro Image really works. This co-branding opportunity has helped Napa Auto Care Centers across the country increase their car counts and sales. In fact, those that have completed a Pro Image project enjoy an average 23% sales increase during the first year. Pro Image upgrades are also available for the interior of your shop. A Pro Image interior upgrade transforms your customer waiting area from merely utilitarian to warm and welcoming. The goal is to maintain your shop's independent identity while enhancing the customer's experience. You can get a free look at what a Pro Image exterior and interior upgrade could look like by visiting the Napa Auto Care members site and clicking on the Napa Pro Image link under the Napa Pro Image tab. Or contact your local Napa Auto Parts store. Your servicing Napa store can tell you more about Pro Image, plus the hundreds of other reasons to become part of the Napa Auto Care family, the largest network of independent automotive repair shops in the country. Let's go back to the apprentice program. A little bit of pay, reaching milestones. You can have a great apprentice program from, as in your case, Napa, but it doesn't tell you as much as how to structure, how to pay, how to put incentives into place. I mean, you've got a great course outline, you've got a Department of Labor approved, but you've got to get creative on your own, right?
When I've talked to people in the past about putting something together, I've heard it mentioned that maybe this should be an internship and they shouldn't have to pay the technician or the apprentice if they're offering them free training. And I really disagree with that. I think that this is an apprenticeship. You know, you're getting something out of them. That's the biggest thing that gets forgotten. I hear about the cost of running this program. Well, they're coming in and producing work for you as they learn. You're billing for that work. So you can afford to pay this technician. You're getting something through this. This isn't a two-year program of you committing to paying them and getting nothing in return in hopes that you have a technician at the end. It's actually you making a better technician throughout the whole process. So you've got to incorporate pay. And I think a big part of what we've done that works well is offering milestones. So the program that we use is broken up into stages. And with each stage, when an apprentice completes all the training that they need, they've taken the tests that are required, they get a pay raise. And they know that a pay raise is coming. And if there's a pay raise every 3 months or so, roughly, then they have something to look forward to. There's a, you know, a carrot dangled there that they're working on getting to, and they appreciate that. And it's not get through this two-year program and we'll talk about pay. It's ratcheting up their pay throughout the whole thing.
I love it. Work study, I wrote down as you were saying that. And when you said it's not an internship, boy, did I agree with you on that? Stages of pay raises. And that's not set up in any apprentice program. That's something that you have to creatively realize to put these incentives in front of people. I can't help but think of the mentor and picking the right mentor. I mean, I think you, Jake, were the mentor to your first apprentice.
Yeah, I've mentored all of our apprentices up to this point. We have one that is working at our other location, and his mentor is actually Rex Lee, who is our first apprentice graduate. And we're going to do a little swapping back and forth. You know, he'll work over there for a little bit and then come here, which is nice that we have that option because they get to learn from somebody different, see some different situations and everything. But that's probably the biggest hurdle, in my opinion, on setting up an apprenticeship is finding the right mentor and the time. You know, a lot of shop owners I talk to say that they're going to mentor the apprentice, but I think they need to be honest with themselves and realize that most of them are too busy to do something like that. Most of them aren't working in the shop every day, and they just can't dedicate the time needed. The apprentice needs somebody that they can ask for help when they need it, you know, any time of the day. So you've really got to lean on your lead technician, whoever that is, and make sure it's something that they're willing to do, they're interested in doing, you know, they have the right personality to do that, and then make sure that they're compensated accordingly. You know, number one, they should never go backwards on pay if they're willing to help you train somebody. But number two, they should be incentivized. You know, their pay should increase, if anything, for helping you train. So the benefits for the mentor is that they can have somebody helping them with some of the, you know, menial tasks that they probably don't enjoy and have done for years, but also their pay will go up a little bit. And in return, they offer the knowledge that they've learned. They help the apprentices when they get themselves in a tight spot. They help walk them through step-by-step how to perform different processes or repairs. It needs to be a win for everybody, but that probably is the most difficult part is finding the right person to mentor your apprentices.
That's a key. And I know that there are some companies out there that are developing mentor training classes and or trying to define and outline how you pick a qualified mentor. Now, in the beginning, sure, it was you. You birthed this program. You wanted to see it work. So you knew you had to attach yourself as the lead mentor in this. Now, Rex Lee is doing it for your newest apprentice. If Rex wasn't in the picture and you were so busy doing other things, give me an idea of an outline as to what qualities you would be looking for in a great mentor.
So I think number one is that you need a qualified tech. So you want somebody that's a master technician. They've got some experience. We need to make sure that they know this industry inside and out if they're going to be teaching or helping. You want to make sure they're the type of technician that does everything right. You know, they're not the guy that's hammering on wheels with an impact wrench. They're using a torque wrench, you know, those types of things. The willingness to share and learn, you know, you can probably see just watching your technicians. If somebody comes up and asks to borrow a tool, are they grumpy and angry and telling them, well, you need to buy one? Or are they willing to loan it to them and ask if they need any help? That's a pretty good indicator who's going to be the better mentor for you. If they're willing to help, they want to see these other people succeed, they're probably going to be a good mentor. So I think as long as they've got the technical aptitude, you know, the certifications, you know that you can trust their work quality and the willingness to learn or to help, I think that really is the mentor you're looking for.
It's not the most tenured or seasoned veteran. And so you're going to be under constant observation to find the right fit.
Time behind the wrench isn't always the best fit. Now, I'm not saying those aren't great technicians or people you need in your shop, but a lot of times those aren't the guys that are willing to help. They a lot of times might not be the guys that are willing to do things the proper way or teach the proper way. And those are what you need to look for.
There it is. There it is. Someone who wants to be a teacher.
Exactly.
Great advice. I mean, all the apprentice programs that are out there, including the one that you guys birthed for NAPA, have all these guidelines in it. But our job here in this podcast is to hopefully take some people from the sidelines by teaching them a little, you know, behind the scenes stuff that you're doing and that you've worked successfully at. I think your fifth apprentice you're into now?
Yeah, we're trying to sign up our newest ones right now. We're looking for the right fit.
Okay, so you found Jason, who came from pharmacy tech, counting pills, as you said. I love that. Give me some examples of where you have found some of your apprentices.
So we've had a few different resources. You know, we tried the high schools. I actually teach an evening class at a high school. We haven't found anybody from that. One of the reasons I think is that in high school, at that young age, a lot of these people haven't experienced the real world, as I say. They haven't gone out and had a job, understood the opportunity that's being offered to them. And I'm not saying not to look in that area. I've heard a lot of shops that have had great success with that. So that's one option. But for us, honestly, it's been running an ad for an apprenticeship. That's been by far the best option we've had. When we run that ad, We get flooded with applicants. And the number one thing I look for when I look through the resumes is just time at their job. So I don't care what they did. If, you know, one of our apprentices, Jesus, was a catering manager. He was making sandwiches. We've had them all sorts of different backgrounds, but they all showed that they had been at some employer for a significant length of time, which is hard to find today. You know, most of the applicants we get have had four or five jobs in a year. And the point I like to make is that if it didn't work out with those four or five employers every year, what are the odds it's going to work out with you? You know, I have to believe that some of those employers probably offered a good opportunity. So I look for time at a job, and that's really worked well for us. It almost always proves to work out.
Got it. You said you placed an ad. Where did you place it?
So we just, on our local classifieds, like a Craigslist locally, it's called KSL. And we just put in there that we're offering a position as an apprentice. It's a paid position. Learn while you get paid. No experience required. No experience necessary. We will give you all the training needed. We'll provide tools at start. Things like that. One of the first things almost every one of these apprentices says when we interview them or when they start on is that they didn't believe the ad, because there's a lot of people out there looking to get into this industry. I hear it all the time that nobody wants to do this. Nobody wants to get into this. And I disagree. I think the problem isn't people wanting to. It's that they have no idea how to. Because if you look at an ad for a technician right now, it says must have, you know, 5+ years of experience, must have your own tools, must have certifications. Well, if you have none of that and you want to get into this industry and you read those ads, what do you do? You know, and you can't afford schooling or that's not an option for you. So a lot of them, when they've read these ads, you know, they look every now and again, and they see this and they don't believe that it's true. They don't believe that we're really going to follow through with what we say we are. That might be the hardest part, is convincing them that this isn't a scam.
Great points. Thank you for sharing that. So anyone who's on the sidelines, anyone who's hesitant, get motivated by what Jake is telling you. Hey, let's talk about in-house training. By the way, I love this topic. I coined this phrase a little while ago, boutique training. And someone said, Carm, what's boutique mean to you? And I said, small, tight, you know, where a trainer will come and just, you know, teach your people. Or Jake will get up in front and teach. And I love the concept, because when you teach, Jake, you learn.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of benefits to it. You know, I remember watching, I think, the show that you're referencing to and seeing some of the great trainers that you had there that are offering this in shops around them. And, you know, one of the biggest hurdles that a lot of shop owners, I think, have brought up is, well, who's going to teach that? Who's going to train my staff? And I think you have a lot of options, you know, either yourself, ask your lead technician if he's willing to do that. And if they are, they're going to learn so much more. Like you just said, when you learn to teach, you're going to research things a lot more thoroughly. You want to make sure that you're teaching everything correctly, that you have all the answers. And so you learn a lot more.
But wait a minute, Jake, I don't think you have to have all the answers. I mean, if your lead tech's going to get up in front of your C and B techs and even your C's and A's and say, hey, to my A's, hey, you know, anytime, contribute. This is great. You know, I'm going to spend an hour with you guys on what I know about this. They make some slides. They have some handouts. Maybe there's a case study. It shows their commitment, it shows their engagement, and it shows that they're willing to teach other people, but they don't have to be perfect at it.
That's a good point. Obviously, incorporating everyone into that training is one of the biggest factors that you should be using here. Exactly. The person instructing doesn't have to have all the answers. I think my point's more that when you're going to train, you want to have as many answers as possible. So you're researching everything you can, because you want to have all the knowledge. When somebody asks a question, you want to be able to answer that. And I think that equates to the person teaching learning so much more than if they just sit in on a class. But you're right, you want to have that engagement from the other technicians as well, for the same reason. If they're engaged, they're going to learn better as well.
Would you even go to a local mobile tech who is really an expert at something and ask them to come in?
Yeah, so if either yourself or your lead technician's not an option, or you want another option, I think one of the best options you have is to talk to your local mobile technician. You know, the show that you had previously about this, I think most of the guys on there were mobile technicians in their areas. And, you know, these are some of the best technicians we have out there. They see all of the big problems, the difficult problems that shops are having a hard time finding. And that's what you want to train on, is the stuff that you have to go outside for. So those guys attend a lot of training themselves. They're really qualified. And I think in most cases, they'd be willing to set something up if you call them and say, hey, we're struggling with blank. You know, maybe it's our guys can't diagnose EVAP system faults and we really want them to learn about that. Can you put together a class? I think in most cases, they'll be willing to put something together. You know, you can talk through what kind of time frames you want and come up with a plan that works for both of you. They'll be happy to have something to put some more money in their pocket, you know.
Your point's so well taken. You know, as we're talking in-house training, you have to be in charge of this. You have to look at the resumes of your people. You have to find out where the gaps are. And, you know, I think the industry is working very hard on technician assessments, you know, even internally in your own business to find out what you're lacking in. Think about a parts distributor that is bringing in a night class and you say, hey, what's he doing the next day for lunch? Could he come in and do an hour lunch and learn for us? Why not ask?
Exactly. They've already got a trainer in your area. They paid to fly him out there and put him up in a hotel. So why not take advantage of that? I think in most cases, you'll find they're more than happy or willing to do that. You know, also don't forget that most of these parts companies have their suppliers that are highly trained and know their product very well. So, you know, let's say you're seeing a rash of comebacks on alternator failures or starter failures or something. Well, they have a rep that knows starting and charging electrical systems very well. And they're almost always willing to send them out and do a quick training. And usually those are at no charge. So, I mean, you buy some pizzas for your shop, have this guy come for an hour in the afternoon, and you're really out almost nothing and you get some great training.
You've talked an awful lot about food here, Jake. I like that.
Oh, man. Yeah, it shows too, you know. I like to eat, but hey, that's the way to a technician's heart, is give them some food, keep them happy.
You're absolutely right. You said earlier, you know, close down a little early, give away some prizes. So your point is, I guess, is maybe we could have these training events, and it doesn't have to be big and flashy, but it's, hey, you're our peoples. Let's do something a little extra for your investment.
Yeah, show your technicians that they're appreciated and that this isn't just cramming knowledge down their throat and trying to, you know, make your shop operate better, but that you genuinely care about their career as well. So that's what we've done, is tried to turn these evening classes with our in-house training into an event. So the few weeks leading up to it, we'll give away tickets for different things. You know, then we'll tell them that during the event, if they ask questions or bring something to contribute, they'll earn tickets. And then we have some prizes to give away. You know, this most recent one, we had a beach umbrella, we got a drone, we had some car cleaning kits, a bunch of stuff like that. And we drew tickets to give out prizes. And it gets a lot more engagement. They're more excited to be there. They walk away with something at the end of the night, not just wasting an evening, you know, away from their family, but they get more out of it. And they've all really enjoyed it and appreciated it, I think.
Thank you. I appreciate your total perspective on the apprentice program and, of course, in-house training. Jake, I know you're passionate for it. I want you to come back. I want to do another episode with you and just kind of get into this a little deeper. Let's do a last call. Is there anything that you wanted to say that maybe we didn't have a chance to cover or reach out to the industry?
Obviously, you can see I've tried to put an emphasis on training. And I think one of the biggest issues that our industry has had, and one of the reasons that we have so many technicians unable to repair and diagnose today's vehicles, is that we've gotten away from training. We've lacked that. You know, we've maybe asked our technicians to go to one or two of the evening classes that turn into a sales pitch, you know. And so if you're a shop owner here, look into some in-house training, boutique training, as Carm calls it. Look at sending your technicians to specialized training. But let's try and increase the knowledge base in our industry. And I think you'll see that in the future, it'll help your shop to be able to take in more cars to effectively or efficiently diagnose vehicles and give your customers a better product at the end.
Hey, thanks. Postscript. P.S., you recently went to some hybrid EV training, didn't you?
Yeah, I've gone to a few here recently. I'll tell you, one of them that was amazing, I'd recommend to anybody, was actually here in my home state, Utah, at Weber State University. taught by Professor John Kelly. They have a week-long training. It's pretty reasonably priced. I'd highly recommend you check that out.
Well, great. And you're continuing to learn everything all the time.
As much as I can. I absolutely love it.
Good for you. Jake Sorensen, good to have you here. 2019 NAPA ASE Technician of the Year and the 2019 Ratchet and Wrench All-Star Technician, Shop Manager, Lead Diagnostician out at McNeil's Auto Care, Sandy, Utah. We're going to have you back. We're going to get some additional great insight from you. Thanks for being here, man.
Sounds great. Thanks, Carm.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.